well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Knox Williams from the American Suppressor Association here in a moment or two, the very latest on the language in the One Big Beautiful Bill, which is uglier than it was this time last week, because the registration requirements under the NFA for short-barreled firearms and suppressors are, they're off the table, right? A week ago, it was the taxes and registration requirements that had been removed in the One Big Beautiful Bill, but Senate Parliamentarian Elizabeth McDonough came out last week and said, no, that won't fly. So now we've got Plan B, which would zero out the taxes but keep the registration requirements in place. An amendment, by the way, that is probably going to be challenged by Democrats again on the House floor. We'll see, or on the Senate floor, rather. We'll see what McDonough has to say. But it is one of the questions I posed to Knox Williams. And he and other Second Amendment groups feel confident that that language, the amended language, will survive any additional scrutiny. Whether or not the One Big Beautiful Bill itself gets to President Trump's desk by July the 4th is still very much up in the air. But let's talk about the suppressor language, the NFA language. And in addition to the text of the bill, the really strong coalition that came together to demand that that amendment, that Plan B, take shape and be included in the bill. Take a look and a listen. Knox, thanks very much for joining me this morning. How are you?
Cam, I'm doing great, man. Thanks so much for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we are talking, the Senate just started its Votorama, which is expected to last maybe close to 24 hours, right? It could run into a Tuesday morning. So there are going to be, you know, hundreds of amendments that are going to be offered by both Republicans and Democrats. One of those amendments will come out of the Senate Finance Committee, right? This would zero out the taxes on suppressors, short-barrel firearms, but it would leave the registration requirements in place, right? And that was Plan B after the Senate parliamentarian Elizabeth McDonough said no. The original language, which got rid of the taxes and registration, did not comply with the Byrd rule, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's spot on. So the language to zero out the tax is already included in the second version that got released by the Senate Finance Committee. So that is in the bill. We understand that Senator Alsobrooks from Maryland is likely going to be the person raising a point of order during the Votorama to try and challenge that provision. But we think that we're in a pretty good spot to get that in. And I think one thing really that we need to clarify is, you know, what's going on with the Senate parliamentarian. And to put it bluntly, she's a partisan hack, right? You know, I don't think that anybody, whether it's gun related or, you know, any of the other myriad issues that are being litigated in this legislation, it's very clear that she was on a one-woman crusade to try and steamroll the Republicans at every possible turn, and we fell victim to that.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because we've seen that takes us to this letter that came out last Friday, a coalition of Second Amendment groups. I mean, a really broad coalition of Second Amendment groups, including the American Suppressor Association, but you know, NRA, GOA, SAF, FPC, and a number of other organizations coming out and speaking in one voice, right? The letter did not call for Senate Majority Leader Thune to fire the parliamentarian, but it did talk about the partisan hackery that we've seen here. What it did call on Senator Thune and Republicans to do would be to, again, at the very minimum, adopt that language that we just talked about, right? Which would zero out the taxes, but keep the registration untouched. You were a part of that letter. Can I ask, was there back and forth? Was there a lot of discussion about, you know, should we call for the firing of McDonough? Should we call for the Senate to ignore her rulings? Was that part of the discussions between these organizations?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything is on the table, right? Like, how do we get from point A to point B? And every single group that signed on to that letter, at the end of the day, wants to see the NFA dissolved. It should not exist. It is an unjust, unconstitutional law, and we all want to see it go away. Period. Hard stop. End of story. We've been working at the American Suppressor Association for 14 years. To my knowledge, we were the first group to publicly start challenging aspects of the National Firearms Act. We helped worked with Representative Salmon's office. We worked with folks at the NRA to help draft the Hearing Protection Act back in 2015. This is very much our lifeblood. This is our core personally and professionally. I don't think that you're going to find another organization that cares more about this issue than we do. But all of these groups were able to come together to say, this is unjust, this is ridiculous. And really, the questions about the parliamentarian come down to questions about tactics, right? Senator Thune, Majority Leader Thune, has publicly indicated as recently as yesterday, he's not going to override the parliamentarian. Now, you had President Trump come out basically agreeing with Greg Stubbe and his assertion that, you know, she's on a crusade to try and scuttle Republican initiatives. And it's absolutely true. And if Senator Thune decides to either fire the parliamentarian, which we definitely think he should, or overrule the parliamentarian, which would in effect nuke the filibuster, you know, we expect to get our provisions put in there. However, we just don't see it as a political reality or a political likelihood that is going to occur during this particular reconciliation process. Now, yeah.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think that that's right. I think you're also right in saying this is a tactical disagreement, right? Senator Thune is obviously thinking about a lot of things, including the midterm elections. You know, you and I were talking off air. If Senator Thune had fired McDonough on day one, right? Just I'm coming into office, new Congress, we're going to have a new parliamentarian. Honestly, I don't think we'd be having this discussion right now, right?
100%.
But again, the political reality, right, of firing the Senate parliamentarian in order to get this bill passed with all of the provisions in it, you know, Democrats would hammer Republicans, right? That would be an issue going into the midterms. And you've already seen and the other issue, too, I think, Knox, is that, you know, both Thune and Mike Johnson in the House are trying to herd hundreds of cats in one direction here. Right. And there's so much at play where if one provision gets adopted, maybe Senator Murkowski stays on. If a bill or if a an amendment, you know, gets rejected, maybe Murkowski ends up voting against the bill. Right. You've already got Senator Tillis and Senator Paul, who said they will not vote for the final version. So you can basically lose two Republicans. Right. And that's it. If you lose two Republicans, not even J.D. Vance can save you. So there's so much horse trading, I'm sure, that's taking place behind the scenes. And while this is our primary issue, and it's something that, again, you know, the industry and gun owners have been working for years, I would say, all things considered, it's actually a fairly minor part of the grand discussions and negotiations that are taking place. I said on Friday that I thought it wasn't hostility that we're seeing from Republicans here. I don't think that they were hoping for McDonough to save them. I've seen that thrown out there, like, you know, well, now they don't have to take this vote. I don't think that's it. I think in many cases it's apathy. I don't think these Republicans care one way or the other what the final language was, because there are bigger concerns for them. Now, does that mean we should be looking to get more senators, more representatives in place that would put the Second Amendment front and center of their agenda? Sure. But again, as you say, this is the political reality we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, 100%. Look, we're in a forever war over the Second Amendment. And we need to look at this not as the end all be all, where if we don't get what we want, we need to nuke the situation. We need to be looking forward and ahead to how do we ultimately get to where we need to be. And that includes protecting the Second Amendment and expanding it in any way possible. This is obviously a big step forward. Zeroing out the tax would be a tremendous step forward, right? It would save taxpayers, gun owners, hundreds of millions of dollars a year. At the current rate, right? If there's a million suppressors transferred, you're talking about saving $200 million for the gun world, right? That's pretty fantastic. It also would help make a lift easier in future legislative initiatives, because we wouldn't have a scoring issue, right? It wouldn't cost the government any money to do that, because it would already be existing statute, right? So that current policy thing would be a major advantage for us. And the other part is, look, if more people buy these things come more common use, it makes it easier to challenge it in the courts, right? So, like, it all really does play into itself. You know, I wish that Thune would fire the parliamentarian. I just don't see that happening right now. But we might get another bite at the apple through another reconciliation process if he does fire the parliamentarian and put in somebody who's actually going to shoot it down the middle. Because if you look at the facts, we should have won that, right? The NFA is a tax, period, hard stop, end of story. To say that it's anything otherwise, to say that it's merely incidental in its budgetary impact or that, you know, it's not from the correct committee of jurisdiction, which was actually one of the justifications that the parliamentarian used, is wholly inaccurate, you know, and just I don't even have words for it.
Yeah, well, so let's talk about that for a second, because, again, her objections were that, I know people, you know, they're, yes, it is a tax, and she didn't dispute that it was a tax. What she said was, again, that repealing this tax would be incidental to the budget, right? And this is supposed to have a substantive impact on the budget. Are you concerned at all that this new language is going to get rejected by the parliamentarian, too? Because, again, the tax is still zeroed out, right? Still coming from the Senate Finance Committee. Seems to me like she could easily say, nah, still doesn't fly.
Well, if she's in there, then we're not going to win it anyways, right? So it's kind of a moot point. It would be all predicated on having a new parliamentarian in there. And I think one of the primary arguments that we could make is, look, this got birded out from a biased parliamentarian. That's the only reason that we moved to this. And therefore, you know, we should be able to go back to where we were, you know, 3, 6, 9, 12 months ago, wherever
right.
we are.
No, I'm sorry. I think you might have misunderstood the question. I'm talking about the, are you concerned that on the floor, when a point of order is raised for this new language, that she's going to come out and say, yeah, you know what? This new language doesn't fly either.
I mean, I don't know how she can, right? She said that changing the tax on any other weapons was germane to the process. You know, so by that logic, we feel very confident. We have had some indications that she's already ruled on it and said that it was germane to the process.
Okay.
Working on confirming that. But nonetheless, we feel very good about it.
Okay. Right?
And think that it would be pretty ridiculous for her to now come out and say, like, oh, well, you can't even change the tax. There's literally no policy being changed by it. You know, so I don't know how she could do that with a straight face.
Okay. All right. Well, that is good to know. And, you know, listen, again, this is going to be a work in progress for probably the next couple of days, right? I mean, the House doesn't get to amend what comes out of the Senate. It's basically a straight up or down vote. But there's still, again, you know, I want people to understand that while, you know, the Second Amendment community may be united behind the provisions that would zero out these taxes and would love to go even further in getting rid of the registration requirements, the one big beautiful bill overall is still very much up for debate, right? I mean, there is still a lot of deal making that's being made. And I suppose it's not out of the question that this whole thing could fall apart. I hope that that doesn't happen, but that's still a possibility here.
Yeah, 1,000%. And I think that you hit the nail on the head earlier when you said, look, for you and I, and for a lot of our people, the Second Amendment is our issue. It's what we are most passionate about. It's our single issue that we generally go to the polls and vote for. But for most politicians, it's not. They're just, you know, frankly, in the political ecosystem, much bigger fish to fry. You know, whether it's Medicaid, whether it's SALT, whether it's, you know, transgender issues, whatever those things are, a lot of politicians care about a lot of things more than they care about the Second Amendment. So we are very much hitching a ride on the wagon of the one big, beautiful bill. For us, it means the world, but for them, it's just part of it. And we are very much at the mercy of the fate of the larger package.
You know, one last question in that regard. Do you think that the GOP takes gun owners for granted?
I think some do.
Yeah.
Some politicians absolutely do. I don't think that all of them do. I think that there are a number of them that genuinely really care about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that it's incumbent upon us as a community to make sure that they understand that, you know, the gun world expects results. You know, I think that everybody out there has every right to be frustrated, to be mad with this process. You know, even if we get the $200 tax removed, that is a win, but it's not the win that we deserve. And we do expect our politicians to do right by us, to fight for us, and to make sure that this fight isn't the end of it, that we can continue to push forward and ultimately dismantle these unconstitutional laws.
Absolutely. Knox, listen, man, I really appreciate you coming on the program. If we get news, I would love to have you back. If not this week, maybe we can have you back next week and hopefully talk about some good news for gun owners.
That'd be fantastic. Thanks so much, Cam.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Knox Williams joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. My thanks to Knox for joining me on the program. Just a programming note, I'm going to be off on Thursday of this week, getting a early start to the Independence Day holiday. But we will be covering what's going on with the One Big Beautiful Bill at Bearing Arms. If need be, I will sit down on my vacation and write up a story just as soon as we know what's going on with this suppressor and short-barreled firearm language. We will also have Knox on the program next week, hopefully to celebrate the good news coming out of the one big, beautiful bill. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, which comes to us from Charlotte, North Carolina. Teen facing attempted murder charge, released on house arrest. Uh-huh. You know, this is not the first story that I have covered today at Bearing Arms, where I'm talking about soft, I don't even say punishment, because, again, this juvenile has not yet been tried, but I guess a soft response to alleged violent crimes involving juveniles. According to WBTV, the 15-year-old offender reportedly committed an armed robbery on April the 7th, which violated a previous probation. A police spokesperson says, despite the severity of the charges and the assistant district attorney imploring the court against it, the juvenile was placed back under that supervision when he was charged with attempted murder last week. The Charlotte Police Department, CMPD, I guess, the Charlotte Mecklenburg County Police Department, says this is an issue that requires the attention of multiple community partners to create change, because it is not the first time that something like this has happened. In fact, it's happening in Charlotte on a regular basis. So, two charges of attempted first-degree murder, three charges of discharging a weapon into occupied property, possession of a handgun by a minor, larceny of a stolen motor vehicle, breaking and entering a motor vehicle, two charges, resisting a public officer, felony possession of a stolen vehicle. That's what this 15-year-old is facing as a repeat offender who was arrested for armed robbery 2 months ago. And he is once again placed on house arrest, meaning he was released to his guardians. He was told to show up in court for his hearing, but that's it. Now, again, and by the way, in April, when he was arrested for armed robbery, he was also charged with violating his probation from an earlier offense. Now, I don't want to see the juvenile justice system warehouse every teenager who gets arrested for a nonviolent crime and keep them behind bars until they turn 18. But is this 15-year-old an ongoing threat to the community? Sure sounds like it, right? He's been arrested and charged with two violent crimes in the past 2 months, including an attempted murder. So at what point does a judge say, you know what? It is in the community's best interest that this teenager remain in juvenile custody until he goes to trial? I guess it's going to take at least one more violent crime before that decision is made. Today's Armed Citizen story from Missouri, Scott County, Missouri, where the Scott County Sheriff's Office is investigating a fatal home invasion that took place, I believe this was early Thursday morning, or maybe late night Thursday morning, 11 p.m. Thursday night. Deputies with the Scott County Sheriff's Office responded to a reported home invasion and a shooting in a rural area between the towns of Benton and Oran. The sheriff there in Scott County, Sheriff Derek Wheatley, said upon arrival, deputies discovered that a homeowner had shot and killed an intruder who was attempting to forcibly enter the residence. The preliminary reports indicate that the homeowner was alerted to the intrusion and acted to protect themselves. The homeowner fired four shots, all of which struck the suspect, who was pronounced dead at the scene. The sheriff said in a news release that based on the initial findings, the homeowner's actions appear to have been justified in defense of themselves and their household. The sheriff went on to note that the safety and protection of one's home is a fundamental right. Wheatley says that no charge has been filed against the homeowner. The incident will be reviewed by the Scott County prosecutor. But, again, at this point, seems to be a pretty clear-cut case of self-defense. Someone's breaking into your home in the middle of the night. They're not there to deliver Girl Scout cookies, right? You have the right, as the sheriff said, to protect you and your loved ones. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a anonymous Good Samaritan in DuQuoin, Illinois, who is able to help a woman who is having a medical emergency when she was behind the wheel. That is not the place you want to be when you are having a medical emergency. Estella Dyer says she was driving along Route 51 when she basically had a blood sugar crash. She said, I made it through DeCoin and through a construction area, and I was headed out on Highway 51 North. I was weaving in and out of traffic. She said, at one point, I remember opening my eyes and seeing the front end of a semi-truck, and I was hearing horns. She said she recalls the Good Samaritan driving behind her. She said, I guess I was trying to find a place to pull over. So I was driving really slow. I had my foot on the brake. Dyer said she had a child in the car. She jumped out of her vehicle, ran up, put my van in park, and then called 911. This happened back on June 19th. Dyer says she was coming home from a visit to Murfreesboro, Illinois. Says she didn't have enough to eat that morning. She said she had taken her insulin, but she just didn't have much for breakfast. She said, I remember thinking to myself, well, man, I need to get home. She said, but then my goal was to make it to the food pantry that day. So in my mind, I still thought I was going to the food pantry and then come home. I mean, honestly, if you're suffering a medical emergency, if you're feeling like you're going to pass out behind the wheel and your brain tells you I need to get home, listen to your brain. Go home, get adjusted, then go out and run your extra errands. Instead, Dyer did not make it to the food pantry. She ended up at the hospital that day. She says also, yes, I'm still driving. She said, I just make sure that everything's on the up and up before I leave. I make sure I have something of substance on my stomach before I leave the house. Make sure there's no reaction to her insulin. I hope that she is taking care of that, not only for herself, but for other motorists. And she's looking to find that woman who was able to stop her car. She said, I just wish I could find her so I could tell her in person because she's my hero. Yeah, I mean, this could have been a very dangerous situation, not only for Dwyer, but for, again, other motorists on the road. So I don't know who that anonymous stranger was, but in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. We certainly thank her for her very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow and Wednesday this week. And we will be covering what's going on with the Votorama. Now, again, I expect that this is going to go on pretty much all day on Monday. And then we'll see what the vote is, hopefully Monday night, maybe Tuesday morning, before this goes over to the House. House, hopefully, vote on this by Wednesday. Maybe it gets to Trump's desk again by Friday. That's the plan, anyway. So, be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We'll keep you up to date on all of the latest shenanigans on Capitol Hill, as well as the latest segment of news and information from all across the nation. Have a great rest of your Monday, everybody. Until then, until tomorrow, anyway. Be well, be safe, and be free.